sleep, man. Come on, go to sleep.
And do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
Well, what the hell are you saying, Doss? You bruised half your body sleeping.
I sleep pretty hard.
Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories.
Hey, it's Brian.
And hey, it's Murdoch. Welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories, your favorite podcast or your favorite new podcast, or welcome to the show.
The way you get involved is by sending an email. We are thestoryguys@gmail.com. Let us know the questions you have. Today we have one from Scott in Davenport, Iowa. And he writes, guys, love the show. I used to be a strict metalhead, but in my old age have gotten more tolerant of other styles and enjoy hearing about them on your program. Thank you, Scott. That said, I love Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah!
And I do remember hearing a couple of weird rumors about them over the years that I would love for you to confirm or deny. What are your thoughts, Mark Murdoch, on Cannibal Corpse?
First, I love this letter. Scott, I love you. I did listen to other bands around in this genre. I remember making really good friends with the record label reps at Earache and Roadrunner, and so I had like all these kinds of bands in the 90s. And then Cannibal Corpse was it was like that and I guess Napalm Death I got kind of second.
Yeah.
I was listening to like I guess the things that were being pushed to me for me to play on the radio.
In the aftermath of the success of those two bands.
Right, because the legacy of those kinds of bands are obviously
there's
enormous.
Some things that make them very specifically noteworthy, and they will become figureheads, those two bands specifically, of this whole genre. And so even if you don't know or ever listen to that kind of music or can't even bring yourself to listen to that kind of music, you probably know these names.
Yeah. Even if you're a Swiftie, I think you're going to enjoy this episode.
So, okay. Here are the two things that Scott brings to us, right? Two rumors. One, did one of the guys try to burn down their neighbor's house? And then he puts in parentheses, got to admit, that's pretty metal. Agreed. And secondly, is there actually a giant sea worm named after one of the members?
By the way, welcome to Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories. I'm glad you're listening.
Those are two very specific and very different questions, Scott. I appreciate that. Should we just start like general overview on this band before we break down these specific inquiries?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like how much do we need to tell people about Cannibal Corpse without saying this? We're talking about Cannibal Corpse, but this is a case of like two decent bands, they break up, and there's one awesome band.
Kind of like Slipknot, right? Slipknot was a whole bunch of, and that's Iowa, Scott, shouts. But Slipknot was a whole bunch of different guys from different bands from a local scene, and they come together and make this band. And where does this happen?
This is in Buffalo, late 88.
Okay, so did you know that online there's an encyclopedia of metalum?
Yeah.
Hey, you've used it before?
Yes.
I looked up Cannibal Corpse in their archive. Permission to read this entry?
Yes.
Okay, Cannibal Corpse from Buffalo, New York, and then Tampa, Florida later, because they moved south. Formed in 1988, years active, 1988 to the present, so they are as old as my younger brother. Genre, death metal, and then themes. I like this part. Necrophilia, misogyny, and that was, I guess, their early stuff. Now they've reformed their ways. Now they just sing about necrophilia. Gore, death, torture, cannibalism, and zombies.
Yeah.
And they're on Metal Blade Records.
I'll never forget who, I don't remember who answered it, but I had to ask someone what necrophiliac meant. And the reason,
like at what age? What age did you ask that question?
Well, Rain and Blood came out in 85, 86.
Yeah.
So that's 10, 11 or so.
Yeah.
So I had the record.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what any of those lyrics meant. But tape trading, when they're introducing that song, and he says the unbelievably terrible, can't even at all say what was said on stage, except at the end where he goes, "This is a song for the girl I left behind." It's called Necrophiliac. Anyway, if there is something we should mention, if for some reason you do not know of what this band is, the genre, what Cannibal Corpse is, if the name didn't tip you off, this is a band that figures out this gimmick of basically how to be a musical equivalent of like a horror movie metal band.
Right. It goes on to define their album art, their lyrics, most of the conversation around them, but it starts with song titles. Will you read the track list from their first album?
Yeah, I was trying to think about a way to do this dramatically, but I don't know any other way. Okay, here we go. Shredded Humans.
Edible autopsy.
Gross.
Put them to death. Mangled.
Okay.
Scattered remains, splattered brains. Born in a casket.
All right.
Bummer. Rotting head. The undead will feast. Bloody chunks.
Mm.
A skull full of maggots.
Okay.
And then the epic buried in the backyard.
Now, we've spent some serious time on this show talking about the importance of Metal Blade Records, and particularly their founder, Brian Slagle.
Yeah, that's episode 158 now, for you nerds.
I read a article about Metal Blade wanting to sign this band based on their song titles alone.
And that's ridiculous. So the guys in the band at the start, it's Alex Webster, Jack Owen, Paul Mazurkiewicz?
Mazurkiewicz,
yeah. Bob Rousse, and a big personality named Chris Barnes. They put together a 5-song demo, and then they booked their first show.
And the story goes that Chris is making money during this period by working in a record store, and his boss happens to have some connection to Mike Failey over at Metal Blade. And so they signed to that label in 89. And this is maybe the most remarkable part of this whole story. They never leave. They are still on Metal Blade Records.
Yeah.
And their latest record, Chaos Horrific, dropped almost exactly a year ago. Same label.
If anyone knows of a band that's been on a label longer than that, let us know. I always thought like the Deftones being on Maverick since 96 or whatever was a long time. But like, this is the late 80s. Metal Hammer recently republished a 2012 interview with Alex Webster from the band that was subtitled Blood, Guts, and Jim Carrey, the epic story of death metal,
oh,
provocateurs, Cannibal Corpse.
They were in Ace Ventura!
They were in
holy
fucking
cow.
Ace Ventura. You know, I've wanted to rewatch a lot of these
movies from the early 90s.
Well, no, these Jim Carrey movies.
Yeah.
And there was a while there where I just was kind of sitting on it where I was like, does my daughter need to see him talking out of his asshole? and then in Liar, Liar, there are some things that are just like, none of that works.
Yep.
When he's like, he's roasting everybody at the meeting and he can't tell a lie. And it's like,
it's problematic.
Yeah. But, so I, thinking back about this, the fact that these two things aligned and how they align are just amazing.
So my wife loves Ace Ventura. I was, when I came out, my parents were like, you are not allowed to see that, right? So I don't have a huge personal relationship to it, but this makes me laugh, this whole story. This happens a few years into the band, but they're still pretty obscure at the time. They're mostly making waves in Europe. More than they are over here in America, because Europeans love heavy music. That's a stereotype that I think they'll get behind, or at least the ones that like heavy music will. The back and forth on the internet for a while was like, was Cannibal Corpse's involvement actually a personal request from Jim Carrey or not? And so we've looked into this, because there are some articles that have come out that said this was all a lie, and like one of Jim Carrey's kids or something is like, that's not true, blah, 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 blah. It looks to me like it was. It looks like this was a Jim Carrey request to have Cannibal Corpse in the film.
Yeah, and the reason why that we think that is back when he was just a living color guy, he was on Arsenio, or Carcinio, as Dana Carvey used to do it, and did this bit about death metal, and people thought it was a joke.
It's in the show notes. It's very funny. In that clip, he talks specifically about Napalm Death.
Right.
I love music. I love every kind of music, but recently I've really started to get into this thrash metal music. I don't know, there's something about it, man, that I just can't let go.
It's
great.
It's hard to know at the time if he's being
out
serious about actually liking this music or if this is a bit. But the story goes that fast forward to the making of Ace Ventura, it's like 5 p.m. on a Friday. Metal Blade Records gets a call. And the question is, could Cannibal Corpse get to Florida by Sunday to shoot this film?
So they're resistant at first because it seems a little good to be true, and they didn't want to be mocked. Imagine being Cannibal Corpse and someone says, hey, I've got this super Hollywood film with a mega marquee guy. Can you fly here to be in it and sing a song about brains? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
all of
it sounds like it's totally too good to be true. Absolutely.
And they eventually make it down there to film. But it takes a little bit of convincing. They end up having to, at first, they tell them no. Because they have some tour dates that they would have to switch around. They end up getting that all figured out, and they get asked again, hey, like, if you could do it later, would you still come and do it? And so they do. They go and make it, and they're told, they're promised, this will not be mocking you, okay? Lots of stuff about this is in the show notes, but you can actually hear the guys talking about it. And my favorite thing in all the interviews with all the guys from Cannibal Corpse talking about this is that when they walk onto the set, they say that Jim Carrey comes out fully dressed as Ace Ventura. So remember what that looks like. And then basically fanboys. And he's like, oh my God, it's Cannibal Corpse.
All right. Everybody got it? Do you got that image of Ace Ventura saying, oh my God, it's Cannibal Corpse? Because I want that to be in your head for the rest of the day. He starts quoting songs and asking them to play certain things, and it's clear that he knows who they are and he really likes them.
I saw it written or said that he actually asks for Hammer Smash Face, because that's what they do, right? Is that the name
Hammer
of that song?
Hammer Smash Face.
I think that's the name of the song. But whatever song they play in the film, he's like, will you do this one? Like, he picks it. So that is the story from the guys in the band, that this is all about Jim Carrey's personal preferences. The other part of the story I like is that when they record, the band says that they made all the extras in the band basically pantomime, and then they put the noise over top, right? So all of what looks like chaos on film is people just pretending and not actually making
right.
noise.
And there is this strong argument to make that this is what will go on to make them the biggest death metal band of all time.
I read an interview where one of them said that they would say that for most of their career, up until pretty recently, that they meet at least one person a day who says that this is their entry point to their band. That the reason they became a Cannibal Corpse fan was because they heard about it, saw it on Ace Ventura. And that makes sense if you think about it, because you're young. I mean, what age, right? You're 11, 12, 13, 15. You see that movie and you're like, maybe never heard pre-internet. You've never heard death metal. And you're like, what is this? Is that a real thing? And they don't make fun of the band. The band is just, they're at a concert and it's loud and heavy, but it's not all done in a mocking way. And, you know, a fun fact that I learned also in this research is that the original theatrical release only had that scene where Ace is in the crowd and he's trying to find someone and he's like trying to ask people and like he's working his way through the crowd. But they cut more scenes than that and just didn't use them. But when they made the version that they put on network TV, they added back in this scene that you probably know if you've ever seen this movie on TV and don't realize it's not in the original theatrical cut, where he ends up fronting the band on stage. So I've got them broken out in the show notes. You can watch both clips, but they're hilarious.
Yeah, where Ace is the singer, which is crazy. Right after this, Metal Blade gets another call from another movie with another offer for Cannibal Corpse. And until they hear that they had already appeared in a film. So that movie withdraws the offer and goes and recruits another band, and they're called White Zombie.
Oh, is this Airheads?
This is Airheads. And that didn't work out as much, which is interesting.
Okay, imagine this at the time. You're like, which is the better gig? Do I do the Brendan Fraser movie? Or do I do the Jim Carrey movie? Do I do the movie that's really about rock? Or do I do the one that is about a guy and animals and Dan Marino? Like, on paper, Airheads probably seems like the better gig.
I forgot about Dan Marino. See, the thing about Airheads is, like, if you asked me to, like, give you a too long didn't read about what it's about, I'd be like, I don't know. I mean, pass. I don't know.
About the band that dig. This was a great movie, but this is very in my alley.
Yeah.
But Airheads is the movie where they take people at the radio station hostage.
I know, but like, it's just a mess of a movie.
Whatever.
Yeah,
it's awesome. It's a movie about radio. I was very into it at the time. With some arguably lucky breaks like this one, Cannibal Corpse manages to become the closest a death metal band has ever been to being mainstream or a household name. I mean, I would guess that there's a portion of people listening right now who probably have always known the name of this band and maybe never actually heard any music that they've created.
Right. And it's especially odd that they achieve this, because the thing they really pioneer in a lot of ways is taking heavy music and having just really revolting, gross lyrics.
They're so bad that I'm not going to read any of them, but I will just tell you that they're lyrics often get termed with words like, quote, transgressive, graphic, and extreme.
Yeah. And this will get them censored and complained about a lot. There's actually a section of their Wikipedia page that has, it's a called Controversies and Censorship that is organized by countries that censors their music.
Alphabetically, you could just go down and see, like, in Australia, this is what's happened. In Bulgaria, this is what's happened.
Because you got to imagine, like, necrophilia is illegal to talk about or sing about somewhere.
Yeah, that is a really funny, amazing thing. Now, what I think about in terms of censorship, bringing it back to the good old US of A, is Bob Dole and Joe Lieberman, right? Like, they were real anti-Cannibal Corpse. And the thing was always like, these two square mothers have never heard this band. Someone is feeding them something. There is no way they know anything about this band.
When I read this, what I heard in my head was, Bob Dole doesn't like dealing with dead bodies. I heard Bob Dole, anti-necrophiliac Bob Dole.
Wow. And, you know, this only makes them more successful, all this controversy.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Brian. Remember, one way you can support the show is at patreon.com. Patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories for $5 or $10 a month. Get bonus episodes, outtakes, a weekly newsletter, and a whole lot more, including some things that we just make it easy for you to access, like my recent appearance on the Talk to Me podcast. I did a live podcast with Josh Toomey. He's part of Knotfest, the Slipknot podcast network, and we did a movie draft at a PopCon, which is a Comic-Con convention in Louisville, Kentucky, back in August. And we got to hang out and just talk about movie soundtracks and movie tunes. And it was a whole lot of fun. You can watch the video of that on our Patreon channel now if you head to patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories. But I thought I'd pull out a teaser of what that sounded like. This is me and Josh Toomey from the Talk to Me podcast talking about movies from the 70s.
A couple things on the 70s I had written down was the Buddy Holly story, because Gary Busey actually sang those songs.
Oh, yeah.
On the soundtrack. I thought that was kind of a cool story. Rocky, yeah, you can't go wrong with some Eye of the Tiger.
Okay, but Eye of the Tiger, not in Rocky I.
Oh.
So this got me. This got me when I was doing the research, right? Okay. Because this is the thing people forget. This, and it's so weird. I don't think most people remember this. This is kind of lost to history. Rocky 1 and 2, sans Eye of the Tiger. It doesn't happen until Rocky 3, and it happens in Rocky 3 because he tries to get Another One Bites the Dust.
Okay.
And can't get it cleared. And so he's out to dinner with his buddies who own this record label, and they've got this band, this fledgling band called Survivor, that they cannot get to work. They've had two albums that are failing.
Yeah.
I think they charted, one charted at like 180 and one charted at like 87. Like, they cannot get this band to happen. And Sylvester Stallone is complaining that he can't get Another One Bites the Dust. And they go, listen, man, maybe we can help each other out here. What if we get one of our bands and they can make this song? So he sends them the movie before it's done. And they actually do the chord changes to the rhythm of the punches in one of the scenes. That's okay. Why it works, because nice. They literally scored the punching, and that's Eye of the Tiger. Isn't that crazy? I thought that was a crazy story.
Just when I thought I knew way too many useless musical facts.
You invited me just to even it out. You're welcome. You're welcome. Patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories for $5 or $10 a month. Get bonus episodes, outtakes, a weekly newsletter, and a whole lot more. You're helping us keep the show going and get it to more people, and we appreciate that. Patreon.com/rockandrollbedtimestories. Now, back to the show.
They basically have been doing the same version of this for 16 albums in 34 years. It's the same thing.
Not a ton of lineup changes with this band, especially because of how much history they have. But there are a couple of important lineup changes that we should probably mention.
Big vocalist change to happen.
Oh, yeah. Walk us through that one. So Chris Barnes?
Chris Barnes, yeah. He had started 6 feet under when Cannibal Corpse goes in to record what will be their album, Vile. Pretty straight and to the point. And there's some disagreements about the way Chris is doing vocals, which has to be an interesting conversation. They end up parting ways. And there's a book excerpt in the show notes that goes deep into this if you want to go a little further.
I will admit, it kind of makes me laugh how seriously these guys take what they are creating. And I'm glad they do, and I don't mean to poke fun at them. But I think to most people, trying to explain the nuances and differences between two death metal vocalists would seem kind of ridiculous.
But they do replace Chris with a guy who has the nickname Corpse Grinder.
Corpse Grinder. Yeah, yeah, George Fisher. He comes to them from a different death metal band that started just a few years after Cannibal Corpse called Monstrosity. And he is still in this band nearly 30 years later. Best thing I read on the internet in the last week is this sentence about Corpse Grinder getting the offer to join Cannibal Corpse. I'm just going to read it. Fisher reportedly screamed in excitement, which alarmed his mother.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a different member switch that is more pertinent to our letter today, though, and that comes a couple of years after the vocalist change.
So, February 1997, Rob Barrett leaves. He'd replaced Bob Rousset, who you already mentioned, on guitar, and that was pretty early on. So now Cannibal Corpse has to find a new guy. So enter this guy named Pat O'Brien.
All right, here's the 411 on Pat O'Brien. No. He's not Pat O'Brien from Alex Says Hollywood.
The sportscaster?
I was trying to do
it. It is the same name, isn't it?
Yeah. Pat O'Brien. That's right.
Pat O'Brien. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
I just give him Tic Tacs. He grew up very close to where we are now, just up the road in northern Kentucky near Cincinnati.
Oh.
In the early 90s, he's in a heavy band in Cincinnati called Ceremony. They never make it, and eventually gets the attention of this band called Nevermore.
Do you want 3 minutes to talk about how Nevermore came to be, because it feels like Murdochian territory?
How about 30 seconds? You ready?
Okay.
Too long, didn't read. There was this band called Sanctuary, and they got a record deal, and it was produced by Dave Mustaine, and they got to play shows with Megadeth, and they got a deal with Epic when Epic still had, I guess, Earache, and were still doing a lot more bands, but they were from Seattle.
Oh.
So when 92 happened, Epic asked them to become a grunge band, and they broke up.
This actually happened.
Yeah.
Epic's like, so do you think you could sound more like Nirvana? Like, three of the five guys are like, okay, fine, we're just going to become a different band. So they become Nevermore. And a couple of years in, they look to add a second guitar player. They find this guy, Pat O'Brien. So talk to us about Pat as a guitar player, just as a guitarist.
Yeah, he's incredibly technical and just proficient. I mean, he's an unbelievable guitar player. And the song that often gets pointed to when this comes up in a conversation is this beautiful ballad that's called Frantic Disembowelment. That's from 2004's The Wretched Spawn.
Again, if you love Cannibal Corpse, I do not mean to make fun, but it's hard to say this stuff without smiling. Okay.
And I'm not making fun of anybody. I still have Slayer bootlegs from the mid-80s where they might as well like have on hair like hairspray and shit.
For those who don't enjoy listening to this music, it can be forgotten how fast death metal is. So it is worth pointing out how proficient you have to be to do this. I mean, it takes real dexterity to do this on the guitar.
Pat O'Brien, he's so good that after Jeff Hanneman from Slayer dies and Gary Holt, who plays in Slayer now, wants to go back to play in Exodus, Slayer gets Pat O'Brien to fill in and finish the European tour after Jeff dies.
Yeah, I mean, so bringing it back to Slayer, as you just did, right? I mean, he's got a connection to Slayer. So this guy's a real deal. So as we've stated, this band chugs along for decades. Pat's part of it, starting in 97. And 21 years in, something happens. And the best way to go about this is probably just to have you read the story that ran in the Tampa Bay Times on December 11th, 2018.
And this will kind of help answer one of the questions that Scott asked at the, wrote us an email. This is from that article in the Tampa Bay Times. Pat O'Brien, 53, was booked at the Hillsborough County Jail Monday night on charges of aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer and burglary of an occupied dwelling with assault. Deputies say he burglarized a house and charged at a deputy with a knife. Less than a half mile away on the other side of the golf course at the... Imagine the Cannibal Corpse guy living on the other side of a golf course. The golf course is called the Northdale Golf and Tennis Club. Firefighters battled rounds of exploding ammunition by a massive fire inside his rental home. At a first appearance hearing Tuesday morning, a Hillsborough County judge told the rocker, clad in an anti-suicide vest with his hands and ankles chained together, that he must pass a drug test before he'll be allowed to post $50,000 bond
and leave jail. According to his arrest report, O'Brien entered a home at 4700 block of Windflower Circle near the golf club just before 7 p.m. on Monday. O'Brien didn't know anyone at the home and didn't have permission to be there, the report said. But when the two residents inside the home asked him to leave, he ignored them. When the couple continued to yell for him to leave, O'Brien pushed a woman in the home to the ground and ran to the backyard, the report said. Deputies arrived at the scene, and after the couple called 911 to report a burglary and found O'Brien hiding behind a fence near the backyard, a deputy reported that O'Brien gave multiple commands to surrender before O'Brien suddenly left his hiding place, ran towards the deputy with a knife. He was shocked multiple times with a taser before being placed in handcuffs.
It gets weirder. Keep reading.
At the same time he was being arrested, neighbors and firefighters watched a large fire overtake the home he had been renting at the 16,000 block of Norwood Drive. Firefighters responded to multiple 911 calls from neighbors who reported that the fire began after an apparent domestic dispute, but they had to flee the home a few moments after entering, yelling that live ammunition burning in the flames had begun to explode. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office later said in a tweet that two military-style flamethrowers were found inside the home.
Whoa. Okay. So I do love, let me just side note here, because this is heavy, that there's a social media manager in this situation for the police department who is like, I need extra content for retweets, guys. And they're like, oh, well, we'll give just to you the exclusive that we found flamethrowers. Like, and, why is the source for that their Twitter account?
And that's just the initial news report. And there's more details that come out later in subsequent days.
Yeah, well, okay, the main details that come out in subsequent days to explain this a little bit is that in the Pat yells the rapture is coming when he runs into his neighbor's house and he pushes down his neighbor. A later search by police of his house revealed that along with those flamethrowers that we learned about via Twitter, there were 80 firearms and 3 skulls.
I had a ceramic skull in my bedroom as a teenager. Can I tell you what that is?
A bong?
No, girl repellent. I had to get rid of that. Anyway, just had to.
Where do you buy a ceramic skull?
I don't know.
I mean, now the internet, but like, wait.
Our art store.
In Tennessee, when did you buy? Small town Tennessee. But they didn't have that like at the Kroger's.
Spencer's. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wherever.
Yeah, yeah, the mall.
Anyway, sorry.
Okay, so do you know what the rapture is?
Listen, I know we talked about Cannibal Corpse earlier, but I feel like you're mocking me.
I'm not mocking you. I'm asking you if you know, because this is important to the story.
Yeah.
This is classic church kid stuff.
I know. But it's the get out of hell free card, right?
Well, sort of. Okay. Let me just tell you this. A classic church kid stuff, because nothing makes you behave like an 8-year-old. As an 8-year-old, like being told that Jesus could disappear everyone that you love at any minute and you could just be left behind and you might not get to go. That's pretty terrifying stuff.
Yeah. And the scene in what's the show where they all split? HBO?
The Leftovers?
When they split and you see the carriages like go down the street, there's no one pushing them, whatever. Yeah. Like, that's pretty dramatic.
That's it. I forgot. You have The Leftovers to teach you about this.
Yeah.
Did you read the book or watch the show, The Leftovers?
I watched the show.
I haven't watched the show. I read the book. I'm a big Tom Parada guy, and like last year I got into rereading all the Tom Parada stuff, and that was one I had actually never read. And his stuff tonally is never as prestige TV dark as you would want. Like when they make adaptations of his stuff, it's always really dark, but like his books actually aren't that dark. So I struggle a little bit with like what the TV show was like since I never watched it.
And I would have trouble reading the book because I wouldn't want to read something that isn't as dark as the show.
The whole deal with the rapture, right? So whether or not they're accurate in their portrayal on The Leftovers, the TV show, I'm not sure. It's the idea that before all hell breaks loose on Earth, Jesus gathers up the good guys, living and dead, and gets them out of Dodge. So that's why you don't want to be left behind, right? And you might remember the books and the movies. Kirk Cameron, Nick Cage actually made a Left Behind movie. Did you know that? That's a real thing that happened?
No. I didn't know that,
yeah.
But I figured of all the movies that Nicolas Cage has made, I guess he's made one of these.
So back to the Cannibal Corpse of it all, the combo of these two factors, right? The religiously themed terror yelling and the massive amount of artillery stash leads folks to believe that A, Pat's mental health has deteriorated, and or that deterioration has been aided by illegal substances.
Right, and so when he goes to court the next day, they give him an anti-suicide vest and shackles, and so he's visibly doesn't look like he's in good shape.
It takes like a week. They get him out on bail, and the drummer's wife will launch a crowdfunding campaign for him, as it's revealed he has no insurance and that he has basically lost everything in all of this. And a few days after his release, the band finally breaks their silence with an official statement. This is what it reads. As a band and as individuals, we all want nothing but the best for our brother and partner, Pat. While we can offer no further info about the incident, we want everyone to know that Pat is getting the help he needs and appreciates the love and support from Cannibal Corpse fans around the world. Pat's currently with family and friends, looks forward to a healthy return at some point. And for anyone wondering, all Cannibal Corpse touring will happen as planned and all shows will be played.
So at this point, we have a logistical problem. Even if his mental health was in good shape, he's out on bail and they've just announced a tour with Swedish pop band ABBA. I mean, sorry, Slayer.
Yeah, but the vibe changes, you know, with like what the relationship is between the band and with Pat as time passes. Early on, they're in the press acting like he's taking a leave of absence, but he won't get sentenced for this for 2 years. In March of 2021, he finally gets a sentence of time served and 5 years of probation, and he's ordered to pay $23,793.45, which is very specific, in restitution.
Very specific. By this point, though, the band, however, has welcomed another sort of heavy music legend in the form of Eric Rutan. I think that's how you say his name. He made himself a name in a band called Morbid Angel, which I knew first and loved a lot. He will become an official member of the band just a month before that judgment gets handed down.
I couldn't ascertain exactly when what happened here. Or what happened here, really? But I don't know if Cannibal Corpse just got tired of waiting, if there was real concern about Pat's abilities or mental health. But judging by message board comments, fans really like Eric Rutan. He's like a big deal. And he's considered to be like one of the greatest guitar players ever in the heavy scene. And you were a Morbid Angel guy?
I liked them first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As for his part, Pat doesn't stay entirely away from music during this. He will start filling in for X Hoarder in 2022. And earlier this year, X Hoarder made an official statement saying he's a permanent member, but he still has travel restrictions that keep him from playing internationally.
Okay. So to review, the letter asked if he burned his neighbor's house down.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no.
No, we got that.
He burned his own house down.
That's right.
At least the one he was renting. But he did trespass into his neighbor's home and start yelling stuff.
That's correct. The second question is, what the fuck is Scott talking about with giant sea worms? And I'm so excited. I know, but I'm so excited that this is where we're great.
This is a much more fun place to end.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so it's a marine life form that is named after a member of this band.
Yes.
And technically, it's genus Unicidian Polychetti.
Yeah. Scott is correct. Yes.
You might wonder why a worm of any type would be named after a death metal bass player. But remember what I said. They get a reputation for being really intense. And this worm is really intense.
With devil horns. One article describes the worm this way. It is really the stuff of nightmares, with 1 centimeter long jaws and growing to a length of 1 meter.
I read that they actually think this thing used to eat fish. A worm used to eat fish, like the piranha of worms. This is the sort of thing Jason Statham should fight in the sea.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on with this thing?
It's so freakishly weird.
And to be clear, it's like in the fossil record, right? This is not, they discovered this as a artifact, not as like, they didn't go dig one up. Here's how it happens. There's a scientist named Luke Parry, and his 2 scientist study buddies, they all are really into heavy music, okay? They discover and get the chance to publish about this worm, and because they get to publish about it first, they get to pick the name. And so I don't know. I mean, I didn't get a firsthand account of how this goes down with Luke and his friends, but I like to think that they were like, listen, this is a quote, nightmare inducing expanding jaw on a worm. what better way to describe it than to equate it with a band who has made an entire career out of horror show bad dream music to begin with? And at least one of them, I guess, has a particular fondness for the bass player, Alex Webster. He is the one of the founding members. He's mm-hmm. been in this band the entire time. And this is how we get
the name.
The Webster Oprian Armstrongy. And that's the official name of this Bobbit worm, which is 400 million years old and is giant.
Scott was right. Yes.
There is a worm named after one of the guys at Cannibal Corpse.
That is correct.
What would be your death metal band name? Have you ever given this any thought? I always wanted to have a pop punk band named Superhero Lunchbox. I just thought that was a cool name. That's not a death metal name, though.
I always wanted to have one called Underwater Backroads, and that was not a death metal.
Underwater Backroads sounds like a bad country song.
Mm-hmm. it wasn't meant to be like, this is great, or...
Though on the underwater backroads is probably where you find the giant sea worm.
Maggot-induced trash water. I hear Homer in my head when I'm carrying recycling or something to trash, and like water gets on my feet. And I'm like, trash water. It's like it's the worst water of any kind because you're like, you know, you don't have on like regular shoes, maybe.
If you want to get involved in the show, you can do that. It's not too hard. WeAreTheStoryGuys@gmail.com is where you send the letters. Instagram.com/rockandrollbedtimestories is where you can find videos and interact with us. Patreon.com and also a place that you can interact with us that we would appreciate you doing so. Just look for Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories there. $5 or $10 a month. You get bonus episodes, outtakes from the show, all sorts of stuff. And it helps to support the show and tell more people about it. So mm-hmm. we greatly appreciate that. Yes. Until next time, Murdoch, what should people keep doing?
Keep telling stories.
Rock and Roll Bedtime Stories is a Story Guys production. The show is produced and edited by Brian Eichenberger. Get more stories, hear more podcasts, and book the guys for your conference or house party at wearethestoryguys.com. Copyright Boy Have We Got Stories Productions. All rights reserved.